Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served the Valley for decades. They'll take care of personal, business, commercial insurance. They'll find you the right insurance for the best price. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Before we get to Stan Savern, our play-by-play call of the day.
2-1. Swing, a long drive, deep right field. That ball is long gone. Goodbye. Jimmy Paredes, a line shot about 12 rows back, deep into the right field stands. As his first home run as a Philly, it's a three-run shot to close this game wide open. It is now 7-0.
If you're slumping, it always helps when the Brewers come to town and the Phillies won it 8-1. There are very few people in this business I respect more than our next guest, and I consider him to be a great friend. Stan Savern, who taught me so much, especially when I needed to be taught things. Stan, welcome. I appreciate you taking time out to be with us today.
Steve, thank you for the kind words. Never a problem. Always got time for you.
Same here. I want to get to Muhammad Ali first, because everybody in our generation crossed paths with him. What was your impression of the man when you did cross paths with him, and at the same time, the legacy he leaves?
I think, Steve, that people of my age and generation, and I'm a number of years older than you, I'm a number of years older than everybody, come to think of it, but Ali came to prominence when I was in high school. In fact, he won the title when he beat Liston the first time. It was on my birthday in February of 1964, and I remember listening to that fight on the radio. Yeah, they used to broadcast him on radio with my dad in our little kitchen back in Cleveland, Ohio. And so it has special meaning for me. My dad didn't care for Cassius Clay. He was a Joe Louis guy, and we used to debate that. But, you know, for people my age and my generation, A, we'd never seen anybody like him before in athletics. Frankly, the culture in the country was black athletes had to behave a certain way. Most athletes had to behave a certain way, but certainly black athletes were expected to be rather demure and humble and so on and so forth, and obviously he was the antithesis of that. Moving on, we got into the Vietnam years. People my age, we were the people fighting the war, and we didn't want to fight it. We didn't believe in it. Obviously, neither did he, so we gravitated toward his stance. But the thing that I always admired most about him, Steve, was that, you know, a lot of people, because they're a celebrity, can say virtually anything they want because there's no personal sacrifice to be made. You can make a stance, but there's no consequence. In his case, he sacrificed greatly for his convictions and paid the consequences personally by losing his title, by being threatened with going to jail, and by losing countless millions of dollars. He knew that he wasn't going to go to the front lines. He knew that he could have fought a couple exhibitions like Joe Louis did in World War II. But even then, he didn't believe in the war and would not participate in any form or fashion. And I think that I admired him most because he did sacrifice. Again, he had something to lose, and he did lose it. But that still wasn't enough to sway him from his conviction. And so that made him wildly popular with people of my age and generation. But I think it won over a lot of people. And I also think it should be remembered that the Supreme Court of the United States in 1969 voted unanimously that he had been treated unjustly, unfairly, and his boxing license was restored. So for those who say, well, he didn't serve, well, the Supreme Court thought otherwise.
Exactly, exactly right. And then a lot of people, the only area where I really felt he wasn't true to himself, I mean, besides, obviously, we can, you know, the personal life, his marriages, that's one thing. The only area I didn't feel he's really true to himself is I know he's promoting, but I didn't feel he was true to Joe Frazier in some ways because people don't realize that. I know Frazier needed him to come back to fight him. To validate his own championship. But people don't realize Frazier floated him some money when a lot of people had abandoned Muhammad Ali.
I agree wholeheartedly. He was far from a perfect man. He had a number of mean streaks in him. The way he taunted Floyd Patterson and just carried him and tortured him so he could beat him more. I don't like the way he treated Joe Frazier because you're right. Without Joe Frazier, even with the Supreme Court, Muhammad Ali was not going to get his license back. And maybe Frazier had his own selfish motivations for that, but he did stand up for Ali. And I thought that Ali was wrong for that. He later apologized for that. He apologized to Frazier, who I don't think ever fully forgave him. But after Joe Frazier died, Ali was genuinely remorseful. But I totally agree with you, Steve. He had a mean streak in him. And, you know, initially he saw Frazier as the perfect foil. But he did take it too far. And again, in some other instances where he could be very mean and very spiteful.
The Penguins. Let's shift gears completely. The Penguins, they got themselves a series now. The NBA should be begging to have a series like this, I think. They've had two blowout games, and all three Stanley Cup games have been one-goal affairs. What's been your thought as the differences between San Jose and Pittsburgh?
Well, clearly their styles of play are radically different. It's nothing new that the Penguins haven't seen before. Both the Rangers, Washington, and to a lesser extent Tampa, try to get physical with them. But it's the old story about Joe Louis. You can run, but you can't hide. They just haven't been quick enough to catch up with the Penguins. Obviously, San Jose caught up with them and were physical with them. But I think that, with giving full credit to San Jose, I think I try to tell fans in Pittsburgh, you know, these teams don't play in a vacuum. You know, the other team's on scholarship, too. They're getting paid. They want to win as much as you do. So I think that people tend to look through the prism of their own team. But I also think, Steve, that the Penguins got away from their game. Now, obviously, part of that was forced by San Jose. But I also think that the Penguins were hit so much because they were there to be hit. In the first two games, San Jose couldn't catch up with them. They wanted to be physical, but they couldn't catch them. They were too quick for them. And I don't think that the Penguins, again, within the prism of understanding that there is another team out there, I don't think the Penguins played a good game. I don't think they played their game. I don't think they played a smart game. One could make the argument that if Chris Letang, who's been known to have a brain cramp or nine in the course of a game, if he dumps the puck at the end of that four-minute penalty kill, there is no, and it was a bad goal that Murray gave up, there's no offensive surge. Now, it might have happened another time. It might have happened later. But clearly, that was a poor play. You're playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. No one's perfect, but you can't afford bad plays. If you make a physical error, so be it. Hockey's a game of errors. But if you make a foolish play, a stupid play, one that an alleged superstar makes, he cannot make that play. There are other issues here, but I only felt it's one game. I never thought that the Penguins would sweep them. Anybody who did was being foolish, and so San Jose got their game. Obviously, that puts a whole different perspective on tonight's game, but I still feel good about the Penguins' game if they get back to it, and generally they have. They've only lost back-to-back games twice since January, once in the Tampa Bay series. I feel very confident. I think they're the better team, and I think that if they get back to their game, I don't think San Jose can deal with them.
And to let you know that mentally where San Jose was and where Pittsburgh was, I think that you can encapsulate that in the fact that the overtime goal was scored by San Jose's third line. And I think the first two lines are relatively evenly matched. I don't know how you feel, Stan, but I feel the Penguins have a huge advantage in the third lines. And I think it's ironic that it was San Jose's third line that did score.
Yeah, I mean, when you stop and think about the beginning of overtime, both teams went right at it. I mean, I think that's one of the fascinating things in overtime. It's also one of the fascinating things about the Penguins in overtimes this season. They've been involved in a ton of them, a franchise record, and they don't sit back. I mean, they come right at you. That's their game. They don't deviate. That's the one thing I like about this team. They're tremendously resilient, and I do think the Penguins have an edge. They've got players who can make a difference in the game. Now, clearly, guys like Pavelski and Thornton, by the way, Thomas Hertl's out again, even though they won without him. That's not a recipe you want to continue. He's out again. But they have Pavelski and Thornton and guys like that who are outstanding players. But they don't have the kind of players who can absolutely do things that other people cannot. Now it's up to those people, in particular Malkin, who's been invisible largely, to make the plays that San Jose players cannot make. And the same thing is true of Letang. The same thing is true of Crosby. And to a lesser extent, Kessel, because he's already proven his mettle and merit in this series.
Yeah, no question about that. When you look at the Pirates, what kind of effect have you seen actually with bodies in the building that when the Penguins play, how much is it affecting the Pirates right now in terms of bodies in the building?
I mean, I think it has. They're slightly down in attendance this year. Nights that the, although, most of that, there's not a huge walk-up. For baseball games, generally, unless it's a hot summer night and say, hey, the Pirates are playing. By and large, it's all based on presale. But clearly, they're down a little bit. I think you have to attribute some of that to the Pirates playing at home on game nights. I will tell you this. While the TV ratings, obviously, the Penguins, this is one of the great hockey markets in the country, if not the best in terms of TV ratings, the Pirates hold their own. I mean, you'd be surprised at how well the Pirates do head-to-head from a TV rating standpoint with the Penguins. I mean, I think there's a reason for that. I think baseball tends to skew older, and it's not that older people don't like the Penguins, don't follow them, but baseball's kind of their game. The Pirates are kind of their team. And the ratings for hockey games show that the entire city watches the Penguins, but if it's head-to-head, those people's preference are to watch the Pirates. So there's been a slight effect, but the attendance is not really much different than it was a year ago. If they are down, and they are a little bit, I think that the hockey games being on opposite Pirate games when they're at home is a factor. It will be tonight, I'm sure.
Stan, how do you look back on your Penn State years with George Paterno and your time coming up here to State College?
Oh, with the fondest of memories. It's one of the great thrills and highlights of my career. I think the thing I like best about it, Steve, was being a part of something that was so big and so grand, and something, even though I didn't go to school there, something I could feel a part of. And even though I wasn't, quote, a Penn Stater, I felt like one. And I felt as something part of something great, which it was under Joe in those years. I was proud to say that I was part one of the broadcasters on the crew back then. It made me proud to walk into the stadium at Beaver Stadium or on the road and be recognized by people, not for the recognition part of it, but to be sort of a part of the scene. It was great for me, as I think back, to be obviously a very small part of the two national championship teams, and to have developed the relationships and friendships with people like you and, of course, George, I miss him, and Joe, who had a profound impact on my life and was a tremendous influence on me. And we had conversations about anything but football. And he was really a strong force in my life. I lost my father at a fairly early age. And not that I, would be cliche enough to say that Joe was a father figure, but I respected him so much for his wisdom and his brilliance and his common sense. And it was a thrill. I mean, I was always very proud to be there, and I'll always be proud to have been part of it.
We used to do this, the pregame show, the Nelson Goldberg, it was his idea, and he would put Gil Santos, John Grant, myself, George, and you, and in a round table, we'd do the pregame show with Joe. We'd sit there for 45 minutes with him and interview. that's where I learned so much from you, because I would listen to how you would phrase questions, how you'd go about it. What was always the important areas that you always wanted to attack in an interview as to how you interviewed a subject? Because I know I learned so much from just sitting there and listening to you do it.
Well, thanks, Steve. I have to tell you, when I first started out, I was the worst interviewer in the history of the world. I was terrible. And I just, you know, it's not something you learn, even though I majored in broadcasting at Miami of Ohio. It's just not something that you taught. It's something that you have to do to understand, and the only way to get better at it is to continue to do it. I think initially I would just ask questions, but as I went along, I would have a narrative in mind, with question A leading to question B, with B leading to C, but never being so committed to my line of questioning that I wouldn't deviate if I heard something in the answer that needed to follow up on. I never looked at it like a question and answer. I looked at it as though it was a conversation between two people and other people were listening in. It had to have that conversational tone. And I tried to be very logical in connecting the dots. Now, it wasn't easy then because, you know, there was only like six of us sharks, you know, trying to get a Joe. So you kind of had to wait your turn and go around the table. But in a one-on-one interview, you know, when I interview people now, I try to have a narrative in mind. This is where I want to begin. This is where I hope to end. And I want this to be a logical progression of questions so that it's a narrative, it's a conversation, and it makes sense.
Well, you taught the junior member of the table of sharks something so along the way. Just
yeah, don't
so
say
you know.
Sharks.
I was
That's
listening.
A bad word here in Pittsburgh this week.
Oh, that's right. I can't do that. Stan, absolutely great. I hope this isn't the last time we have you on because you know the depth of respect I have for you, my friend.
Thank you, Steve. I'm honored that you asked me. As I told your producer, I'm only a phone call away, or he actually got me on Facebook, and I know you're shocked to know that I know Facebook and Twitter, but barely, but I'm only some kind of a shout away anytime for you, Steve.
Stan, thanks so much. Appreciate it, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
Stan Saverin. To say I think he's one of the best ever would be an understatement. You can't, if you sit in my shoes, I don't know, what the heck was I? When we started doing that thing in 84, it was 84. The first year in 83, we didn't do it. And in 84, Nelson came up with this idea. And, you know, look, I walked in there, and I'm thinking, I'm looking around. There's Gil Santos, there's Stan Saverin, then there's George, and there's John Grant. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got to hang in here somehow. I mean, I'm the junior member of this group. And he treated me as if we're friends from day one. And it meant so much to me. I never forgot it. And that's why I just, you know, between Gil, John, Stan, I learned a lot football-wise from George, but broadcasting-wise from Gil, John, and Stan, I learned so much from them that there are pieces of what they do that I do today that I picked up from them. Now, obviously, along the way, I have my own way of doing things. That's the part people don't like. No. But I think the world of that guy, personally, professionally, and it's just, he and George were a great TV team. They used to have that 1 hour, well, they do, they replay the entire game, and then they do the 1 hour show on TCS. And I think a lot of our fans who go back, I think, loved the fact that they heard Stan on the show today. It will not be the last time. All right. We'll take a break. We're brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. You know, you along the way, you meet certain people, and you feel like you catch certain breaks along the way, and you try to listen to people who have been around the block and can help you. You know, and then when I mean help you, just by listening to them, they help you. And I caught every conceivable break on the face of the earth, you know, being around a play-by-play magician like Gil Santos, being around a common-sense guy like John Grant, a great professional, and a guy that just had great knowledge of the game and would ask the right questions in Stan Saverin. You know, being around somebody who was one of the nicest people on the face of the earth that knew how to treat people in Fran Fischer. Man, I don't know how I got so lucky to be around people like that who were so generous with me, but I did. Yeah, it's, so far, it's been quite a ride. And I'm not sitting here right now with the ability to handle certain things if it wasn't for working with people like that. All right, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com.
Watsontown. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us as we roll through this Monday together, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley with distinction for decades. Lots of repeat customers. Why? Well, quite simply, is they're the best at what they do. They want to make sure that you get the right insurance, best price. And not only that, but they do a great job of taking care of all types of insurance, personal, business, commercial insurance. They have different agents that will take care of different areas. And again, you have a claim, they act as if it happened to them. Great group. Really, I mean, and the more you know the Purdy people, the more that you just like and respect them so much. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. The Cavaliers' effort last night. I was really impressed in the fourth quarter, weren't you? All right. Wow. They just got absolutely run out last night. You know, it's all about matchups. I think that was Stan was getting into that, Stan Saverin was, about the matchup with San Jose and Pittsburgh. And he's right, you know, and this is something I've talked about repeatedly as well, and that is, you know, why can A beat B, B beat C, so you assume that A can beat C, but nope, C beats A. It's because of the matchups. Matchups mean everything as to how you win and lose. That's what, when I was talking about the Penguins with Stan, the part that I found for the Penguins that was disappointing the other night was that the third line scored the game winner. That's where the Penguins, matchup-wise, don't have a small advantage. They've got a huge advantage, third line to third line. I mean, Phil Kessel's on the third line. Haglund's on the third line. They'd be on the second line of most teams. Kessel will be on the first line of most teams. Haglund will be on the second line of most teams. You heard Kenny Albert on the show last week talking about what it means, you know, that how badly the Rangers did not want to lose Haglund. But monetarily, they had to. Well, for whatever reason, the Cavaliers don't match up with the Golden State Warriors. Now, you know the backcourt between Thompson and Curry, they've got a big advantage there. But they really struggle matching up with Draymond Green. They struggled, and last year in the finals, too. Remember last year in the finals, it took a little bit for Green to get going, And remember, the Cavaliers led the finals 2-1 last year. And then Golden State took Game 4 in Cleveland. Then they won Game 5 with ease at Oakland. Then they won Game 6. And that's where Green kicked it into gear. Green's the guy they can't match up with. And Green, who had struggled after the problems he had in the Oklahoma City series, is not struggling now. And that's the part that strikes me. You know, Green is the guy, the one matchup problem that they have. And they're not having any trouble matching up with LeBron James. James was fine last night. I mean, he had 19 points. He was 7 of 17 shooting. The area he was not fine, the 7 turnovers. And he made some bad ones last night. Just the way it is. He made 7 turnovers. Happens. But the legacy questions are starting to get in the way a little bit. It's amazing with LeBron James that the standard that they will pin to some people is different when it comes to him. What do we always hear, Sean? We always hear that X can really cement their legacy by winning a second Super Bowl. X can cement their legacy by winning a second World Series. Crosby can cement his legacy by winning a second Stanley Cup. Right? That's what we hear all the time, right? That's what all the legacy experts tell us, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many's LeBron James won? Oh, that's right. He's already won the second. Oh,
I think the pressure, though, that is really falling on LeBron is, well, ran the coach out of town, pretty much handpicked players to play around him, and they're down 0-2. But that could be attributed to the entire Eastern Conference just not being as superior as the Western Conference. And if you kind of look at the whole scope of the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers are the fourth best team in the NBA. Three ahead of them are in the Western Conference.
Well, look, the kitchen sink analogy is going to be in play on Wednesday night. It is not a must-win, obviously, because there's still going to be a Game 4. But it is a strongly suggested win for Cleveland on Wednesday night. They're at home. They are undefeated in the playoffs at home, even in the Toronto series. Yeah, they wrapped it up at Toronto, but Games 3 and 4, they get their backsides kicked at Toronto in Games 3 and 4 when they were up 2-0. So they've been an exponentially better home team, especially in the playoffs. Now here is a golden opportunity for them. And to get it home and to make this thing a series.
And I think Cleveland fans think, yes, this is the golden opportunity. We now have a healthy Kevin Love. We have a healthy Kyrie Irving. You know, Irving got hurt last year during a game early and was out the rest of the way. Now you got Kevin Love last night on concussion protocol, so that'll be one thing to keep an eye on between now and Wednesday night. It's too bad you got to wait till Wednesday night for the next game.
That's what TV told them.
Yeah.
You got to remember who's running the show here. It's not at Olympic Tower on 645 Fifth Avenue, okay? That's not where the show's being run. The show's being run down the street, okay? It's being run up in Bristol. It's That's why you got to wait till Wednesday for it. But for Kevin Love, that buys him some time. For the Cavaliers, that buys him some time. If Kevin Love can't go Wednesday night, expect Channing Frye to be the starter. Expect that. Ah, my goodness. But it's interesting. The NHL will not get the TV ratings that the NBA final does. They won't even be in the same stratosphere. Yet the three games in the Stanley Cup final have been fast, exciting, and have all been close. They're all one-run games.
I understand that NBCSN is the premier cable network for hockey, but every single Stanley Cup final game should be on NBC. I mean, they had a great opportunity to have. What else? They're running comedy reruns on Saturday night on NBC.
I agree with you. The rest of the games are on NBC starting tonight.
Right.
There's no NBC Sports Net.
Other than pre and post game stuff.
It's all on NBC.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what cable was made for.
Sure, and they're for the diehards. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So they can do that, and you can watch that and get what's going on. I think that's going to be a great game tonight. But again, the Penguins still have a chance to go up 3-1 and win the series at home.
Now the turning point Saturday night was they just a couple seconds away from getting out of that 4-minute double minor that Bonino had, and Murray gives up that soft goal. I mean, that was a true turning point in the game.
Well, it was, but that started with Letang not dumping the puck down to the other end. That was a big play, and then Joel Ward, that's a puck Murray has to handle. No question. That is tonight. LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm not going to play in the Olympics. Steph Curry, I've had some injuries. I'm not going to play in the Olympics. There are a lot of people you're going to find that are not going to play in the Olympics. I will be at the U.S. Open next week, where I hope I get a chance to run into Stan again. And I'll be honest with you. There are a lot of golfers, and they're not going to be in the Olympics. It is not the goal of these guys to play in the Olympics. And you're not going to go to some place that just is not a great place to go to. What do you want to go down there with all the violence they have down there, the Zika problems they have down there, the water problems they have down there? Yeah, this is great. I can't wait to go. Wrong. Now, I know the suit's upset, but that's... The suit is already calling Steph Curry and LaMarcus Aldridge unpatriotic.
There will still be 330 hours of coverage around all of the NBC Universal channels, and you'll just have to pick and choose, and I think
yeah,
there's going to be
and choose.
A...
I'll also
me
pick...
too.
I'm going to pick and choose. There's going to be a lot of times I'm going to be picking Major League Baseball and the spikes. But that's all right.
You're a couple weeks out from starting spike season there, too.
Oh, my goodness. Cannot wait. It's a week from Friday.
The annual kickoff with the Crosscutters.
Yep. So do that. And that'll be at Williamsport. So we'll be up in Williamsport that night. Now, the show won't be up there. We're not going to do the show up there. I'm just going to do the show first, then I'm going to drive up there, which is what I usually do when it's a weeknight game up there.
You're turning out of your complex, and the police escort will meet you right at the junction of 99. You go from there.
Well, I always have to remember that the police escort the cars in front of you and not in back of you. I got to keep them. It's not a police escort if the car is behind you. All right. We'll wrap things up, and we'll give one more slice of perspective on Muhammad Ali in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We shot high in May and had a lot of happy customers. At Sunbury Motors Ford, we shot for 101 sales in May, and we were so, so close. Now, we're determined to do it in June, and you'll be the winner. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. SMC is where you want to be during the month of June, because new Fords will be discounted to the lowest price possible. Plus, we'll give you more for your trade. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 45 new Escapes starting at $19,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 123 new Ford trucks with F-150s starting at $23,749.
Save over 11 grand.
SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for up to 60 months on Fusions, Edges, Escapes, Explorers, and F-150s. Sunbury Motors Ford will reach the goal of selling 101 new Fords in June. Our goal is your gain. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years.
years.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
I'm going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. George can't hit what his hands can't see.
I saw Sonny Liston a few days ago, Cash.
Ain't he ugly? He's too ugly to be the world champ. The world champ should be pretty like me.
I'm hollering loud because I can back up every word. And I'll whoop any man in the world, and I want everybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
I told you I'm the real champion. I told you I'm the champion of the world. All of you bow. All of my critics crawl. All of you suckers who write the Ring magazine.
Well, great, I don't have a mark on my face.
Yeah.
And I upset Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest.
Right.
I am the king of the world.
Hold it.
I'm pretty.
Hold it, you're not that pretty.
I'm a bad man.
Wait.
I shook up the world.
And I said, Joe's going to come out smoking, and I ain't going to be joking. I'll be pecking and a-poking, pouring water on his smoking. And then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
Oh, yes, Muhammad Ali through the years. It's interesting that this part you heard at the end about Frazier, if you kept it to that or in that neighborhood, but he went too far with Frazier. It's interesting that I met Joe Frazier and liked him very much. Had a great, great to talk to, gracious, classy. I like Joe Frazier. And there's only so many times you can take the verbal abuse, especially when it's somebody that you helped. You're like, wait a minute. Okay, when you were down and out, like who came up with a few bucks here and there and kind of forwarded your way? Frazier didn't have to do that. Did Frazier have to do that? No, he did not have to do that. That's something a lot of people don't realize about the relationship between the two. And Frazier worked hard and even pulled Nixon aside at one point and said, look, he's got to get his boxing license back. And as Stan points out, and Stan's absolutely right, the Supreme Court didn't just rule 5-4 in Muhammad Ali's favor. They ruled 9-0 in Muhammad Ali's favor. So that's something where, just file it away. But Ali, socially, did things that you had not seen anybody else do. The influence he had on an entire generation was tremendous. And as an athlete, an elite athlete, the fact that he went out and won two different ways as an elite athlete is something that is unbelievably impressive. Remember last week we were talking about team sports and that you can be the face of, if it's an individual sport, Tiger Woods, face of golf. Serena Williams, face of tennis. Novak Djokovic, face of tennis. Muhammad Ali was the face of boxing, and more so, even after he retired, was still the face of boxing. The sport is completely different now. My brother Kevin and I watched a lot of these fights on over-the-air live TV. The second Leon Spinks fight was on over-the-air live TV, the Superdome. All of us got to watch it. When Ken Norton broke Ali's jaw in San Diego, we were watching, my brother and I, on live TV, not on closed circuit. the Ali was like lightning. 6'3", 220, dancing, you know, right on the balls of the toes, right on the balls of the feet, snapping out that left jab. Then he had a big right. He would, that right was like a jackhammer. Then after he came back, he still danced, still moved, but the difference between the Muhammad Ali pre-Supreme Court versus post-Supreme Court was that Ali could get hit. Ali could not get hit leading up to the Zorro Foley fight, except for one time. Henry Cooper caught him with a big left hook in London one night, right at the end of the fourth round, and Angela Dundee did something illegal. He used smelling salts and brought Ali back, and Ali then knocked Cooper out in the fifth round. But post-Ali, we all found out Ali could take a punch. And that was completely different, where, you know, you could hammer him, and he had the depth of a heart of a champion because he would not go down. Remember, Norton broke his jaw early in the fight. And Ali did not win the fight, but Ali lasted all 12 rounds. How do you do that? How do you do that? Says something to you about him. It's amazing. He is the perfect example that it is possible to have time heal all wounds. Because Ali in the 60s was not universally loved or popular. Ali in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s was universally loved. In the 60s and into the 70s, I will say this, the area which suddenly... the area where Ali started to really, in terms of universal love and respect, it, even from people who were against him in the 60s, was the night he beat Foreman. After he beat Foreman, everybody was like, I don't think people could believe it. Look, I remember I was 16, 17 years old at the time. I thought Foreman was going to take him out in four rounds. I just didn't think at 32. I mean, Foreman was a big, powerful, strong man. I didn't think at the age of 32 Ali would survive.
Your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.